Well, last September, France became the first European country to ban wearing full-faced veils or burqas in public spaces. In Australia, there was an effort by the New South Wales MP, Fred Nile, to legislate against wearing the Islamic veil in public. And in the UK, the ex-Home Secretary, Jack Straw, raised, then sort of retreated from a discussion about whether teachers wearing full-faced veils could actually interact well with their students and pass on information. The fact is, whether or not it's warranted, the whole discussion around this issue last year became even more tricky. So it's helpful when Muslim women themselves step up and have their say. One woman born and bred within Islam in Algeria, but now resident in New York, Professor Mania Lazrig, has pretty reluctantly, she says, bought into this debate. She's a sociologist, so she's on the lookout for a range of cues, the knowns and the unknowns, that affect people's behaviour. The common factor in her mind is the politicisation of the veil. But more than that, it's all the new rules around women's lives that the veil represents that worry her most. To explain why, I welcomed Mania Lazrig to Saturday Extra.
Thank you.
First, your response, Mania, to the French developments about banning the burqa in public places.
Well, I think it's the best example of the contradictory policy of the French government towards its Muslim minorities. In 2004, the French government had banned the wearing of the headscarf in high schools. As a result, a number of, you know, high school girls, you know, had to quit high school. So, and in 2010, the reason given then was that the wearing of the headscarf was a sign of proselytizing, and it was endangering the secular character of public education. In 2010, the government banned the burqa and the niqab. And the reason is that this is to protect the freedom and dignity of women. It's no longer for, you know, the proselytizing reasons. So this is switching entirely, you know, from one argument to the other, saying on the one hand the veil is a religious sign. On the other hand, it is simply a sign of, you know, sexual, whatever, discrimination or oppression. So they have to get their act straight. You know, what this does is simply continue to politicize the wearing of the veil, and it will probably, you know, create copycats. You know, in other words, you know, some women will wear the niqab out of sympathy or, you know, for or solidarity with those who can no longer wear it.
Mm.
So this is no way of dealing, you know, with Islam.
Well, in your book, Questioning the Veil, this is what you highlight, that it is, there are so many different motives around the veil that the mere discussion of it starts to alter altogether the nature of wearing it. Now, I mean, what is the, you just said this is not the way to deal with it. What is the way to deal with it?
Well, I think we have to stop politicizing the veil. States should not mandate the veil, you know, as Saudi Arabia and Iran do, for example. They should also not ban the veil, as France is doing with some sort, you know, some types of veiling, and, you know, of course, you know, Turkey, you know, had, you know, traditionally done that, because in the current climate of the reveiling movement that has swept across the Muslim world, a number of women are saying they're wearing it out of their own willpower. It's their own decision. They're exercising their agency. But the fact is, when you have such an overly political environment, when the veil has become so saturated with politics, how can a woman actually be exercising her agency and say, well, I'm wearing it because, you know, I like to wear it because it is a sign of modesty, or it protects me from sexual harassment, or I want to show pride, you know, in my culture, it's a sign of cultural identity, or I simply want to show that I am a pious woman. How can a woman actually know that she's making a decision, you know, not under duress, when the environment within which she's making it is so highly charged and so highly politicized? Mm. And so, in fact, the fact of the mere donning of the veil conveys meaning that the woman, you know, who is wearing the veil is not in control of, because the veil is not simply any kind of clothing. It's not just a piece of clothing. It symbolizes a whole history, the history of women in the Muslim world since at least the 15th, for the past 1500 years, if we go by the Islamic calendar. And it's a history, of course, of gender inequality. It's also a history of gender inequality that's grounded in a juridical system and in a constellation of social norms regarding conceptions of women and the roles in society.
Yes.
So that there is a symbolic meaning, you know, to veiling, which, you know, women really cannot control.
I'm just going to tell listeners, Mania Lazareg is our guest, and she's a sociologist from New York, but born and raised in Algeria, and she's written a book called Questioning the Veil, Open Letters to Muslim Women. Look, what I thought was very interesting in your book, which where you really wrestle with this, in fact, I haven't seen a book where somebody honestly wrestles with the difficulties around this, because you yourself, you've never worn the veil, have you?
No, I have never worn the veil. It was never on my horizon.
Your mother did, though.
My mother did. My older sister did, but she took it off, you know, as soon as Algeria became independent in 1962. And this is something that this re-veiling trend is obscuring. There was a whole period of time in the 1950s and the 1960s when women willingly took off their veils. This is the women who were wearing veils before. And some women like myself, who had never worn a veil, continued not to wear a veil, and, you know, had, you know, no problem with, you know, going out without a veil. And there was this, you know, a wonderful movement of liberation, if you will, of women from the custom and practice of veiling. Hmm. And that movement is now completely eclipsed by this re-veiling trend and this rehabilitation of the veil as a form of liberation.
Well, I suppose this is the interesting thing, because, I mean, obviously that happens in other areas of society too. There's an ebb and flow of you know, what you might call conservatism versus taking on more risk. And I suppose the question is, how much is this to do with women's choice and how much is it not to do with women's choice? What's your verdict?
Yeah, but this is what I have a problem with. You know, yes, I mean, narrowly, if you define choice narrowly, that, you know, a father is not compelling his daughter to wear a veil, a brother is not compelling his sister. In that way, in that sense, yes, you know, a woman is willingly taking up the veil. But if you look at the broader picture, you realize that, you know, this choice is absolutely constrained. It is limited. You know, for example, there is a trend now among young men to tell, you know, their future bride that she will have to agree to wearing the veil after they get married. So you have pressures like these, you know, that what is the woman going to do? She loves her fiancé. She wants to marry him. So she will say, okay, I'll agree to it, even though I really am not so keen on this. So there are all sorts of subtle pressures. Second, you have also an itinerant group of imams who go from country to the next, and especially to Western countries, to preach to first, second, and third Muslim immigrants in Western countries. And they push them, they inform them about, you know, what Islam is about, what the main principles of Islam are, etc., etc. But there is always a section on what are the proper duties of the Muslim women. And lo and behold, the veil is turns up, you know, mm-hmm. as being the most important duty of a Muslim woman.
But why don't the women why don't the women argue with this? Because after all, in the West, a similar thing might be the kitchen. That women were once, and I mean, it's still an ongoing debate, I mean, very live debate around exactly how women divide their time up. But women are very involved in that debate. I don't know whether Muslim women are as involved in this debate.
But you see, that when it comes to issues of faith and religion, very few young women have really read the Quran or they have read the commentaries. How many, you know, young Christian women, you know, have read, you know, the Bible, you know, chapter and verse, for example? So the experts in the domain of religion come around and they quote, you know, chapter and verse and say, this is, you know, what the text says about women. And these are usually passages from the Quran that are highly open to various, you know, interpretations, from the most conservative to the most liberal. And, of course, you know, they present the most conservative interpretation, and they also adorn this with all sorts of superstitions that have nothing to do with the Quran. A young woman I interviewed, for example, and I believe her. I mean, her faith was genuine. She, you know, took a long time before she decided to wear the veil. And then I asked her, what is it that tipped the balance for you? At what point did you say, now I cannot do without a veil? Mm. And lo and behold, you know, she told me that it was the notion that if she didn't wear a veil, after she died, her body, she would be tormented by snakes. They would be lying in wait, you know, for her in her grave. And I, you know, of course, you know, respect, you know, her belief that she was, you know, very serious. And it is this superstition conveyed by others around this notion that the veil is a religious duty that, in fact, you know, prompted this woman to ultimately decide to wear the veil. And, you know, obviously it was a free choice. You see, between quotation marks.
Can I raise something with you that I have heard interestingly put, really counterintuitive, that actually it's the individualism of the West, with a sort of emphasis on maybe even a bit of narcissism, which says you go for your individual identity. This is how you stand in the world in the 21st century, that in an odd sort of way has played into some young women taking up the veil, that it's both the religion, but it's also that sense of I claim my little zone of life by standing out from the crowd and wearing the veil. Do you think there's any validity in that?
That is a very interesting and important question, actually. And I have some concerns, you know, about, you know, the notion that a woman who is taking up the veil today in London or in New York or in Paris is asserting her individual identity. Usually this discourse is held by women, you know, first and second and third, you know, women, Muslim immigrants, you know, to the West. And this is of concern to me because what it does is say that I'm rehabilitating the veil. I decided that the most important thing about my Islamicity is the veil. The veil is the mark of my Islamicity. And I challenge that woman on a number of grounds because she's not simply taking up, you know, putting on a scarf, you know, or a long dress. She's taking up something that is embedded in a long history. And in doing so, she is actually revalidating the compulsory use of the veil in countries, you know, that legally mandate it. And those women in those countries cannot then argue against, you know, the state that's telling them that they have to wear it. Mm. So the woman in London, in Paris, and in New York is partaking in the suppression of the woman's will not to wear the veil in other countries, you know, in other Muslim countries. So why would the woman want to assert her individuality by wearing the veil?
Well, Mania, thank you very much indeed for joining us. I'm sure it'll raise a lot of issues in people's minds.
Thank you for having me.
I hope you found that a helpful conversation. Mania Lasreg is a professor of sociology at the City University of New York, and her book, Questioning the Veil, Open Letters to Muslim Women, is published by Princeton University Press.